National Gallery Podcast.
This is the National Gallery Podcast, and I'm Miranda Hinckley. First, we're off to the Mediterranean island of Malta with research fellow Jennifer Slivka. She's produced a 10-part series of short films for the National Gallery about the life and death of John the Baptist. St. John's Co-Cathedral in Malta is home to a particularly powerful depiction of the saint, a great altarpiece made by Michelangelo Merisi da Caravaggio for the oratory of the Order of the Knights Hospitallers. The work shows John the Baptist's beheading at the request of Herod's stepdaughter, Salome, and the St. John's Co-Cathedral Foundation kindly let Jennifer and Leah Caribbean take a look. Leah began by asking why Jennifer felt it was so important to include this particular painting in the series.
This painting by Caravaggio is going to feature in our martyrdom episode, and really that's because Caravaggio painted one of the most iconic representations of the beheading of John, and it's extraordinary that we get to see it here in situ.
I see. And the depiction of the beheading, it hasn't quite happened yet, has it? John is on the ground, he's being pinned down, but the executioner hasn't quite finished, has he?
No, it's extraordinary. And so the executioner has started the job. He's slashed at the Baptist's neck with that sword, which is now laid to the ground, and instead he's now reaching for the dagger at his side to finish off the job. It's a very grisly representation, but you can see how Caravaggio has actually thought through how this might happen.
And there's this huge pool of blood at poor John's head.
It's rather gruesome, isn't it? And it looks like it's almost coagulating before our very eyes. But rather extraordinarily, Caravaggio has signed his name in that blood, and this is the only signed work by Caravaggio. And further, he's signed not only his name, but an F before his name for Fra. So he's identifying himself as a member of the Knights of Malta.
Now, you need to tell us, why is he on Malta, and why is he now a member of the Knights?
Well, actually, he fled Rome rather famously after killing a man, so he was no longer welcome in that city, and he decided to flee to Malta, and luckily obtained the protection of the Knights of Malta and actually became a member of their order, and so was then commissioned to paint this altarpiece for their oratory. Rather unfortunately, he then once arrived in Malta after the unveiling of this altarpiece on the feast day of the beheading of the Baptist. He then entered into another altercation with his fellow knights and was imprisoned here on the island. And managed to flee.
He managed to flee.
To the embarrassment of the knights,
presumably. I can imagine. But it's quite amazing because we have prisoners looking out of the window on the right-hand side of the painting at this scene. It seems that art and life are mirroring each other.
It's true, and many scholars have tried to read a very biographical content into this painting.
And he loves this subject, actually. He paints it again, doesn't he?
It's a subject he comes back to, and particularly after this period. And he paints more specifically the next narrative moment, the moment that Salome is receiving the head of John the Baptist. And the National Gallery owns a rather beautiful representation of that painting. And rather extraordinarily, Caravaggio may have painted it after fleeing Malta, and then he sent it back, sort of as an expiation for his sins, as a way of re-ingratiating himself with the order.
Did it work?
Unfortunately not.
No.
He was defrocked in absentia in this very room in front of his own altarpiece.
But that National Gallery picture is just one depiction of St. John the Baptist, but you've discovered that, in fact, St. John the Baptist is to be found throughout the entire National Gallery collection.
Yes, once you look for him, he's everywhere. And that's something that we've tried to do with these episodes, is really not only follow the life of John the Baptist through many different guises and ages, but also look at a variety of works, from the very earliest works in the collection all the way to the 19th century.
And you can see these online for free.
Yes, and we hope you'll enjoy them.
With thanks to Jennifer Slivka and the St. John's Co-Cathedral Foundation. If you can't make it to Malta, the National Gallery's Caravaggio, entitled Salome Receives the Head of John the Baptist, is on display in Room 32. And you can watch the entire John the Baptist film series by visiting the National Gallery website or the gallery's YouTube channel. Now to an early work by an Italian Renaissance master, a small picture you might not have noticed on your visits to the gallery. Curator Carol Plazzotta reminds us of the joys of looking closely at paintings, as she tells Cathy Fitzgerald why she loves Raphael's Allegri, an intensely coloured painting from the first years of the 16th century that depicts a young knight asleep, dreaming of two very different women.
For me, it has a fairy tale quality.
Right at the heart of the picture is the young knight who is asleep, reclining against his red shield, and he is posed very gracefully, perhaps not entirely unselfconsciously, and he's got this wonderful outfit on with his shiny armour, brilliant blue tunic, orange tights, shiny greaves covering his shins. He really does look the picture of elegance and the height of fashion.
And tell me about his dream.
He's visited by two female figures. On the left is Virtue, and she holds out a sword, standing for military valour, if you like, and a book standing for scholarly pursuits. And so obviously she represents the virtuous interests that a good knight should aspire to. On the right-hand side, we have Love, and she holds out a flower, and she's also got wound around her this lovely coral necklace, and she also has a flower in her hair, and her drapery is a lot more seductively arranged, with her blue dress hitched up at her hip. Almost growing out from the knight's heart is a bay tree, and that stands for enduring fame, and it acts as a kind of hinge between the two sides of the picture, and it also divides the landscape background. So near to Virtue is, and in, exactly above her book, is a craggy mountain, which was the difficult route to Virtue, which you have to pursue going uphill, but the reward is to get to that beautiful golden castle on the hilltop, not so unlike in spirit the castle in Urbino where Raphael grew up. And of course, we mustn't forget he was only 21 when he painted this. It's very much a young man's picture. And on the other side of the bay tree is this serene, beautiful valley, not arduous at all. And this is the way towards love, Elysian fields in the background.
And she's actually curled in towards him. If you were body language experts looking at a photograph.
Yes, she's definitely more seductive, although it has to be said that he is inclining towards the other. But I think the thing about this picture for me is the fact that he is not choosing. He is almost combining these aspects. This is the knight who has it all in many ways. And it's of a size that you hold in your hand. And I'm quite sure that it was not designed to be stuck on the wall as we have it today. But it was probably kept in a little velvet bag or somewhere very, very private, like a study or something. And it would have been taken out to be looked at. And I think young men do dream of their future and all the things that they hope for, and it is a picture that really does express that spirit, and I feel that Raphael had the same feeling as he was painting it, and his patron was probably a very young man on the verge of getting married, so it sort of combines everything.
Carol Platzotter talking about Raphael's Allegory in Room 60. After a two-year refurbishment, Room A, which houses the overspill of pictures from the permanent collection, has reopened to the public. Hung in broadly chronological order, the elegant ground floor display features more than 200 works and offers visitors the chance to experience four centuries of painting in a single space. Special project curator Colin Wiggins took Leah Caribbean on a tour of just a few of its delights.
The lower gallery has been completely remodeled to give you this sense of light, air, space that allows the pictures to be displayed in a way that really is more proper to an art gallery where people can appreciate them and respond to them as works of art.
And what's really brilliant about it is that it's like the most beautiful pocket collection of the entire history of European art from the 13th to the 19th century. And it allows things to be displayed, it seems, in ways that you can't upstairs. Is that right?
Yes, we can make connections here in a way that's more difficult upstairs. For example, where we're standing now, where we've taken images of the Virgin Mary, sacred pictures by a whole range of different artists from different geographical locations, and put them all together, enabling visitors to have a look at the different ways that the Virgin is depicted, the different signs and symbols that are associated with her, and see an extraordinary display of obviously one of the key players in the National Gallery's collection.
And yet, when we turn round a corner, we're in a completely different world.
Right, well, yes, we've walked for, what, 10, 15 seconds, and suddenly we're in the 19th century. We've traversed centuries, and we can see at one end of the display the beautiful Rosa Bonheur horse fair. This is actually a kind of two-thirds scale replica of the original picture that's now in the Met in New York. It was made by Rosa Bonheur and her lifelong companion, Natalie Mika. Rosa Bonheur, a fascinating character. She smoked, she had her hair cropped short, she wore men's clothes, and she lived with her friend Natalie. She was an avid feminist as well. So here's to Rosa Bonheur.
I think that's what's so lovely about this rehang of Romay. It's these connections. It's like somebody's given me the chance to see new stories. Whichever glance I make, I'm taking in new pictures, new stories, and it's the most delightful hang.
Well, new stories and old stories, because alongside the Rosa Bonheur, there are paintings by Monticelli. Now, Monticelli, who he? But Vincent van Gogh totally loved the work of Monticelli. It's now extremely unfashionable. We've got a fair selection of his works, but we don't put them upstairs because the general critical opinion now is that they're quite dreadful. And we wondered what on earth Vincent was doing, thinking these things were so wonderful. But another contemporary artist who really responds to Monticelli is David Hockney. So come and have a look. It gives viewers today an opportunity to make that judgment for themselves. Who's right, contemporary critical opinion or Van Gogh and David Hockney?
Thanks to Colin Wiggins. And if you'd like to take up his invitation, Room A is open to the public every Wednesday and on the first Sunday of every month. That's it for this episode. If you're visiting, don't forget we're open 10 till 6 daily and till 9 on Fridays. Until next time, goodbye.